SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two on this Friday, and another big weekend, and the contest players descending on Saratoga, and that includes Nick Tamaro, whose vision up on the giant screen in the Humphrey Finney Pavilion. Nick, you glorious on the big screen.
It was a wide angle, right? I wanted an accurate representation.
You got to stop wearing those plaid shirts.
They're endless. Yeah. Well, you know, what's the alternative, Steve? Stripes? That's even worse. I can't do horizontal stripes. It becomes a never-ending type of
vertical. Vertical
is where I'm, yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's true. No, it was fun. I wish I could have been there. Obviously, I unfortunately have an obligation tonight that kept me in Houston, so I will not be in Saratoga until the Travers, but I was able to see a screening of all of it and had, of course, participated in it. It's funny, the day itself was very surreal. You know, the backstory on the show itself that was a little bit untold. Jonathan and Pete mentioned it a few times, but all of us had won at least $15,000 to $20,000 the day before. So, you know, we were in kind of a funny state because we were basically playing an entirely new tournament with some people at a little bit of a disadvantage relative to others, but we had all sort of accomplished something already, and then collectively we just did an atrocious job on Sunday. I mean, it was probably, you put eight people together, all of whom know what they're doing on some days, but I mean, you get a guy like Tony Joe, who's as good as anybody you're going to find. Garrett Skiba is probably the best live money tournament player in the game. You know, Tom Arndt has been doing this for a very, very long time. He's been doing it well. Frank McGoey's outstanding. So, and we just, I think we picked like three winners. So it was very, very odd that it went down that way. And my man Philly Joe had the right angles, played him when he needed to, and got the job done. So unfortunately, he wasn't there either. He's going through a couple of issues with his dad's health, so we're hoping for the best. But it was a good time. Hopefully, I mean, I obviously want this to be something that continues, and I'm hopeful that if I get into another one of the events, can get back to the final table and have some fun.
Well, everybody rooting on that front. Talk about the Del Mar trip.
It was a good vacation. That was about what it amounted to for me. The contest portion of it was a little underwhelming. I did have one. You know, it was as far as contest play goes, we were talking about this at the table, Jonathan and myself, that he and I play live money contests very, very differently. And the way he plays, he can have kind of a good opinion and he'll do well. But the way I play, if I have a good opinion, I really need to kill it. And I had a good opinion in the sixth race on Saturday, and they crossed the wire, and I thought, oh, man, I must have really hit this good. And it just ended up that I played it poorly. And so I was a little disappointed in myself because I've admittedly had some success betting well in these contests. And so that's how it went down, and that was a little bit of a letdown. But I think in terms of what I'll take away from it were the debuts of Chasing Yesterday and Roadster and being at Del Mar. So it was a lot of fun. Everybody that ever wonders, when you see me in a California contest, it's just dead money. The only time I've ever done well was that contest back in May, and the only reason I was anywhere near the leaderboard was because of the Preakness. So I have nothing disparaging at all to say about California racing. It's just not my thing, and I seem to be willing to go and spend money on a vacation each time, so I'll probably do it again. But it was, you know, it didn't amount to any kind of highlight. So next contest for me is Woodbine. I'm going to do Woodbine and then Keeneland, and may sneak in a trip to Gulfstream for this September 1st contest that they just came out with, because they're taking Gulfstream and Saratoga. So that's the plan for now.
Excellent, excellent. Well, you're deadly in Chicago when it comes to
picking
off. Yeah, and so when you've got a program system that works, why tempt fate? And
I should basically just be like a one contest engagement each year, right? I should just only go to Keeneland or only go to Arlington, and then maybe I'll allow myself one Keeneland trip.
There you go. And you seem to have the formula when it comes to Chicago. Well, and maybe we'll get a couple of thoughts about Million Day, but let's focus in on Saratoga. And Nick, I started the show recapping in part yesterday's action, and a lot of people have struggled, I think, at Saratoga with some of the continuity, the elements of races off the turf and wet tracks, which can really confound people. Yesterday, though, I focused on the pick six sequence and the carryover, and the first and last legs of that carryover are billboards for the opportunities that are afforded on off the turf races. $10 and $15 on the two most likely winners in those two races. That could correct people's first half of the meet if they bet it right.
No question. And in fact, we texted about it yesterday. You texted me, and Mamo was a good example. And then the last race winner was an even better example of. And I think it's a combination of things. One of the things that happened with Mamo is that Steelers Fan for Life opened 5-2. And I don't know if that was a combination of the name, people not realizing the race was off the turf, and or George Weaver. But together, what it did was it created value right from the start, and it just ended up that Mamo's odds stayed high. And, let's also be honest, that as far as he went, he was getting a massive trainer change. Ray Handel claiming off of Chad Summers is a huge upgrade. So that was something that you wanted to factor into it. Also, he's very astutely ridden. And, yeah, he's one of those horses that crosses the wire and pays $10, and you think, wow, maybe the game isn't that hard. But you do have these opportunities most often in off-the-turf scenarios. And, and that's something, quite honestly, that Andy Serling's been preaching for years about off-the-turf days, that there are so many people that just ignore a signal when they see that races have been taken off the turf, yet they end up missing a lot of opportunities where you will get races where dirt horses are being overlooked and turf horses are being overbet, and those opportunities, you have to take advantage of them. So those were two very good examples. That Mama Mary horse has scorched so much money in two races in a row and will probably gallop next time sprinting on the turf when she can finally get back to it, and you almost wonder how much her form is going to be a little bit dirtied up. She seems to be a very popular, public type of horse, but that was funny. And of course the Finger Lakes Invader with her very very believable and very trustworthy buyer figures are really what you zoned in on there.
Well, the guy doing the buyers at Finger Lakes, he is just savvy.
You got to watch that guy.
Preferably on the big screen.
He puts only on the big screen. He puts a lot of work into those figs. Let me tell you, it's been a multi-year process to get those figs. I figure Lake's a funny place. I remember I mentioned it to, I've talked to Craig Mulkowski about it. I've talked to Paul Matisse about it. I mentioned it to Jerry Brown a couple of years ago. And one night at Sperry's, the Finger Lake is a tricky spot because you don't get a lot of variation in distances, but you get a lot of races that are the running lines and finishing positions are sort of exaggerated by, one horse that just outruns the field entirely, and big margins, speed biases, things like that. So, no, it can be a funny place. But that was a situation where I was like, okay, these are all lightly raced horses. Mama Mary is a turf horse. So is it believable that we're getting this kind of price on this horse? So, no, it worked out. No worrying about it now.
Exactly. And you have to just roll with the weather punches. And I would also suggest, and I'm going to bring this up with Paul and Duke Matisse, who are going to join us on television, Seth Merrow and I, on Loose on the Lead Sunday. But I would just guess, not knowing the way these algorithms are working, but if the public is misbetting those races, the off-the-turf races, it's going to make it even tougher for the algorithms to find these kinds of horses. And that is probably enhancing our price. So the people who are frustrated at how the computer robotic wagerers are depressing prices, you have to go to town on the opportunities and in the scenarios where they're wrong and where they're heading in the wrong direction. And that appears to be part of the equation on these off-the-turf opportunities.
Yeah, you know, and without knowing anything specific on it, and I'm not attempting to sound as educated as possible on it, based on the conversations I've had with people specifically about modeling and what they do a lot of times to be prepared for certain running lines with computerized wagering, a running line like Mamo's Last can really throw it off as well. And you know, it's no different than the public, really, who can be very thrown off by one running line. And Mamo's Last running line was bad. And so it will, the computer, even though it can be calibrated to not do so, is always going to put a lot of stock into that last running line, too. The public does as well. So I learned that the hard way making morning lines for a couple of years at Sam Houston, there's, because it even happens there, the public will really latch onto one running line and not really look at much beyond that. So it's a lot about what most recently happened, and what most recently happened for that horse didn't matter. What did matter was what most recently happened was the claim.
Yeah, agreed. Well, let's dive in, Nick. The people have been very unhappy that you've been traveling and we've been unable to talk the last couple of weeks. That's hurting their bottom line. So you got to get people healthy right now.
We have a lot of work to do. Miles to go before we sleep.
What do you want to start tomorrow?
No Robert Frost dramatic readings from me today.
Okay.
As far as tomorrow goes, the most interesting stakes race on the card by far and away is the Lure. But I mean, I would be remiss in not talking a little bit about the 4-star Dave. And I was talking to my friend Travis Stone on the way into work this morning, and I was informed that Divisadero is running here. That's obviously how plugged in I've been to news. I've just been handicapping or working, which is a great decision on Kelly Rubley's part, because I think you're virtually guaranteed of some pace in this race with Voodoo Song and Heart to Heart signed up. I don't quite know if Divisadero is good enough. I do think Yoshida is the horse to beat, and there's really no, I think he's kind of supposed to win this race. Heart to Heart, of course, is just as admirable a horse as you're going to find. I guess the most interesting thing that will happen is what takes place in the first half mile of this race. Is Heart to Heart is going to almost certainly show that speed that he always does, but is it going to be a scenario where Julien Leperoux is willing to take hold of him like he did in the Shoemaker Mile? It's very clear. When Heart to Heart has won, he has had the lead the entire way. He is a horse that needs to have the lead in order to be most effective. Will he be willing to really go, all in and be sent and force Voodoo Song to rate? I mean, I guess it's possible, but we've also seen Voodoo Song look like a totally different horse when he has the lead. So it's sort of where worlds collide and these one-way speed types end up knocking heads, and I feel like that just is really going to set things up for somebody from a little bit off the pace. I think ultimately Delta Prince and Yoshida come from about the same spot, respectively, with a half mile to go. And in a heads-up battle between those two, I'll take Yoshida. So I felt like he was a horse that knocked on the door of having a lot of potential last year, looked like he was finally putting it together towards the end of the year, came back with a really good race at Churchill, and the Queen Anne was far from an embarrassment. I mean, he ran fine. So I guess it'll just be a question of if he's ready off that little bit of a break. The good thing is that we're talking about a six-horse field to kick off that late pick four, where, I think you could legitimately use four of them. I don't quite know if Made You Look is good enough, but he doesn't have to run a whole hell of a lot better than he did in the poker in order to be dangerous in here. So it's definitely a really fun group. So is the Lure. And, I don't really know any other way to put it. I'm going to make one of my biggest bets of the meet so far on Inspector Lindley. Using him in multi-race plays, using him in whatever I can get him intra-race here, I know that he's a little bit of an obvious horse. He's probably a horse who's going to open up a shorter price than I would like because, let's face it, Shug is very, very popular. This is a horse that had noticeable trouble. I'm not keeping any kind of secret from the public. He did not have a clean trip in the Wise Dan. He rallied into a very, very slow pace. Feels like he's going to get enough of a setup in here. This is a horse that has been effective at Saratoga in the past, as if that really matters. I think things are finally going to go his way in this race, and that's enough for me to take the plunge there. So between Mr. Cub and potentially Ford stretching out, I think there should be enough pace. I guess Black Type has developed a little bit more speed in his older age. That's enough for me to bet Inspector Lindley and to kind of focus the the latter part of my day on it. I'll probably end up heartbroken when Zanora wins again, like I was during last year's lure. But I can't take him off a 1 year layoff, and projected is a horse to me that is just a complete phony. I mean, he's a horse that's looked all dressed up multiple times and has found a way to lose. Other than that Baltimore-Washington Turf Cup down at Laurel, he's a horse that really has snatched defeat from the jaws of victory multiple times. So he's one that the public can kind of have at 5-2 or so. I'm going to really – Inspector Lindley's where I want to go.
I agree with Inspector Lindley wholeheartedly, and I want to use – as at least maybe looking for a little bit of a value type to kind of boost the try. Conquest Panthera is going to work his way into my tab. He's going to clunk up for third in here.
Yeah, he's a kind of horse that I would love to use underneath. Probably tops out around a mile, but he's one of those horses that has that one little run, and he did not get a favorable setup in the King Edward last time at all. Whereas I kind of felt like Delta Prince did, and you know, I don't know if I want to really fault Delta Prince for that as far as the Four Star Dave goes, but I think that dynamics were definitely against a horse like Conquest Panthera, and he still acquitted himself very, very well. I thought he ran a good race, and I think there's probably a little unclear what his best distance is, but you know, even though it was just a horrible running of it, he did miss by a neck and a mile at Keeneland in the Makers 46 last year. So this is a horse that still feels like he's capable of doing some good things.
Let's jump around and talk about the second half of the card, maybe the pick five. How about that allowance, that seventh race? You know, these turf sprints are either very welcome to a certain group of handicappers or completely revolting to others. It's an all or nothing. I've gotten beaten badly in a few too. It's been kind of a mixed bag for my play, but what are we doing here?
These are tough races. They really are. I mean, it's a question of whether you can envision the right kind of pace scenario, I think. I think that's the hardest thing for everybody, is to try and really determine how it's going to be run. And you I think what I have found to be very, very important is that you can't overrate the races that horses are coming off of without fully interpreting the dynamics. And I mean that about the seven tomorrow in terms of a horse like Conquest Tisfire, who looked like at home and cooled out at just inside the eighth pole and found a way to lose. And that was a very slow pace for a 5.5 furlong turf race. I mean, we were talking about just a supersonic turf course those first few days of the meet. And that pace I know people are going to see 44.77 and say, what is he talking about? That's insanely fast. That's actually extremely slow, especially the 22.09 that they went in the opening quarter. And Battle Joint is a fast horse. So now Conquest Tisfire finds herself in a position where she's down inside and maybe having really no choice in terms of what to do early. She's just going to have to go. I don't believe that she's fast enough to get the lead in this race and wire this field. I'm not going to spend my money on that. And amazingly, you know, I would have bet that a horse like La Naturelle getting claimed from Wesley Ward would probably start to go the wrong direction, and she's gotten better. So she is the horse from that race that you want to take. I know she had a very good trip chasing inside and angling out, but again, that was a pace that really was not conducive to an off-the-pace type. So I think that she'll benefit quite a bit from being getting a little bit more to run at in front of her. I think just the sheer size of this field is going to guarantee that there's a little bit of an early gallop. I know that a lot of them are more long-winded routing types that are cutting back, but I think you'll get some pressure from Majestic One on Conquest Tisfire, and that should certainly ensure that there's enough pace for La Naturelle. You have to use Munchkin Money, who was, you know, relatively close to a fast pace last time, now comes back off a layoff. The layoff would normally be a concern, not with Brian Lynch. Brian Lynch is probably at his best with horses coming back off 180-plus day layoffs. And this is a horse who, as she was in his barn a little bit more during 2017, she got better, better and better. And I think he was finally figuring out at the end of the year that her game really is sprinting on the turf. So, you know, she'll probably be around that 3-1 type of favorite, not the kind of horse that you want to be beaten by in a multi-race play. So I don't have anything overly clever other than probably to make sure you include La Naturelle at a good price.
Nice. That'd be great for Kerry Medever and for Mike Hennig. I want to stay on turf sprints for a second, because I don't think there's any difficulty necessarily in determining the pace scenario. That part of it feels like, you know, you can parse out pace pretty readily. The confounding factors to me are the people trying to cut back, which doesn't seem to work on the turf, except for Linda Rice. And we've had this discussion, you and I and Andy and I, and probably you and Andy. Then there's the surface switches, like and certainly a guy like Jason Service, anything he wants to do in a turf sprint should just be accepted implicitly. Because he knows what the World of Trouble was, the fastest horse by far coming into the quick call the other day. But you still, that's fine. How's he going to take to, you know, fairly yielding turf? These are the equations, the surface switches and the distance changes. Those are the horses that make these turf sprints, you know, doubly tough by half.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have those, that collection of trainers, and I mean, the ones that come to mind, nobody more so than Jason Service. Joe Sharp is also incredibly good with turf sprinters. He's almost a savant when it comes to turf
Arnaud Delacour.
And Arnaud Delacour, Jeremiah Engelhardt, I want to say, has about a $3 ROI in turf sprints. So he's a guy who knows which horses to get to the turf. And then on the flip side of it, you get a guy like Chad Brown, who could win at a 40% clip on the turf, and he almost never has turf sprinters and would very, very rarely win one, especially with an older horse. So I think you want to stay on top of who might be getting a horse to what they think is the right thing for them, and who maybe has that one step that's quick enough to stay in the mix. Because I think when you're dealing with 5.5 at Saratoga, it's an even quicker trip than you're going to face in any of the turf sprints now at Aqueduct and certainly at Belmont, are a little bit more of a standard type of race, if that makes sense, where you can actually have a horse cut back a little bit and be effective, especially at 7 furlongs at Belmont. They're just outfooted at Saratoga, and that's the really hard part. So I've certainly spent a lot of money trying to find those types, and other than the really super talented ones that also do have some positional speed, it's difficult to come from way back there. You end up running into a lot of issues, not only with whether there's going to be pace in front of you, but potentially with traffic, and that's not what you want to be betting your money on.
Well, and the other part of this is that you need to segregate the chart from the turf sprints and go over them 2-3 times, read the notes, watch the replays, and pick out horses that are going to get a cleaner opportunity. And I'll give you one from that stake the other day. Rusty Arnold, totally boss from the 12 hole, 16-1. And that's a horse that's going to win and win soon. So we talk about doing the work, taking the notes, recapping performances, and being in a position to capitalize later if you got victimized previously. Take heed and make it up when that opportunity comes back around. Let's maybe... any pedigree work on these maiden races? You got anything there?
There was one horse I wanted to mention just in that pick five. It'll be in the pick four sequence as well. The ninth is going to be a race, I think, that's dominated at the windows by Pattern Recognition and Mask. Breaking the Rules will obviously take a lot of money, too. He's a very popular horse from a very popular barn. Pattern Recognition is probably the more dangerous of the two. I mean, Mask could win this race. I don't see how anybody could possibly bet this horse. He's just extremely difficult to trust, and has just been incredibly disappointing on multiple occasions. The race that Breaking the Rules and Phi Beta Express come out of, it's important to really note that race and to go back and watch the replay, because somehow the slow break that Phi Beta Express had is not documented in the running line. And it's not so much that 5-8 Express broke slowly that created a huge problem. It's that 5-8 Express was the speed. And so what happened in that race was Gold for the King was able to go out and set a pedestrian pace, and it completely changed. It took the race and turned it upside down. There was just nothing that went the way it was supposed to. So this is a scenario where 5-8 Express is the speed and has Kendrick Carmouche back on him, who, with all due respect to Manny Franco, Kendrick Carmouche is the best gate rider in New York, and he's going to be loose in this field. So I think you want to bet him, and you want to bet Breaking the Rules because he had to rally into that slow pace. I was not really a big Breaking the Rules guy on that particular afternoon, but he did run very well. And so I think you want to give him a shot, and you want to bank on 5-8 Express really having a lot more to offer with a cleaner trip. So that's just another price horse to throw in. The 2-year-olds earlier on the card, the pedigrees in the sixth are solid. There's definitely some that probably look a little bit better than others. I would certainly heed the workout reports. It looks as if Todd Pletcher is now beginning to really unleash the last parts of the arsenal. And as far as the sixth race goes, Empire of War has been working well. Is a declaration of war out of a little bit of a turfy dam, so I don't know if this is necessarily going to be a really dirt-inclined horse. He also has Chase in Colorado, who is by Tappet out of Anabas Creation. That is a Vinnie Viola St. Elias stable homebred. And Anabas Creation, of course, was beaten ahead in the Clement Hirsch by Zenyatta, a run on the poly track, so it'll be difficult to tell necessarily if that horse is really going to be a dirt horse. There's some slightly more obscure pedigrees where real money was paid. Clarovich Stable paid $95,000 for a Mark Valesky. And so Network Effect is a horse who is a little bit light on the pedigree side. So you kind of have to take the approach that this horse should be a runner. The sale workout was quick, and this has been more of a classic Clarovich Stable purchase, whereas we've seen them, reinvent. Seth Klarman has reinvented, I think, a little bit of the way that he buys horses now, having the majority of his stock with Chad Brown. This is a horse that you would have seen with Rick Violet in years past that would go out and blaze 5.5-6 furlongs. This one's going 7, which I think is an even better sign, and wouldn't really have any longevity. So it's a good kind of mixture. The horses that have run before, Road Home comes out of a slow race where he made a little bit of a late move and didn't really make much of an impact, so I think he'll have to improve. I thought that Americano on the outside was interesting because it seems as if Bill Mott is putting a lot more into getting horses ready earlier in their careers. That's not something that he really did before. Granted, this is a colt, and he's had more success with fillies. The pedigree's sort of light. The Kira McLaughlin, A Thread of Blue, is a half to Ia, who won the Coyote Lakes at 9 years old and was also multiple stakes placed, including the William Schaefer, also a half to Norman Invader, who was a turf winner overseas. There's a little bit of pedigree on Empire of War. Yes, it's a declaration of war. There's turf on the dam site. There's also Separation of Powers. So Separation of Powers this horse is a half to Separation of Powers, who, of course, is by Candy Ride. It'll be interesting to see how the Declaration of Wars take to the dirt. I think there really isn't still enough information on what has happened. There were a couple of 2-year-old winners in Road Home's pedigree. Create a Dream was a turf stakes winner as a 2-year-old, so we'll see if that translates into dirt ability for this horse. There's a number of horses on the dam side for Cadron Flats, none of which were particularly accomplished. One, 2 6-figure earners, and again with Network Effect, it's all second family. There's not anything that really existed in that first family, so we're gonna have to bank on it being kind of a quick horse, quick first step, I would think, with that workout down. It was a 20-4 workout at Ocala, so there should be something there. And obviously, I can't, I'm not just gonna plug everybody, but the workout reports are invaluable when it comes to these races. I would say that of as much as a horse can be a standout in a 2-year-old turf route, I mean, go back and watch Teachable Moments debut. The horse was green. He got off to a poor start, made a big move late. I mean, I think what this felt to me like was Chad Brown wanting to get this horse to start at Belmont so they could go in at Saratoga. This is a horse that wants to go 2 turns, and he was probably needed that last, and he should win. winning factor, having some speed on the inside. This is a horse who took some money in that Joyful Heart race, and Joyful Heart and Teachable Moment both took money in there. So he's dangerous from the inside, having speed and having Kendra Carmouche. We'll see if there's any other pace. And as far as the Adirondack goes, I'm interested to see if Lyrical Lady runs back to that big debut. I mean, that was a very, very impressive debut run. That was a good-looking opening day field, and she really just 86'd him. So lived up to that $625,000 purchase price. She will not get an easy lead in here, I would imagine, because it looks like both Grandma Gertie and Seuss Fortune only really have one way of going. I would imagine Mucho Amor will have a little bit of speed. And I do know that historically we've seen the Adirondack, much like the Schuylerville, be won on numerous occasions by horses who can come from off the pace, because you just a lot of times have these lightly raced speed balls that only know one way to go, and that opens the door for somebody late.
I'll only go back for just a quick second to that sixth race. The one horse that didn't get mentioned that I think is going to run a lot better on the fairly quick turnaround is Derby Date, Lucas, the Will Take Charge out of the terrific multiple stakes mare, Smart and Fancy.
Very fleet-footed turf sprinter she was. We could see, so almost wondering after this horse's debut if we'd see it next time out on the turf. And I've enjoyed betting. There haven't been as many winners lately, but I've enjoyed betting Lucas horses stretching out on the turf, dirt to turf, especially in their second start. He's kind of done okay with those surface changes, but maybe it'll be to the turf next time. It's obviously not a bad sign that he's willing to run the horse again on the dirt.
Yeah, that horse will be a lot better. That's a Lukey special, and certainly is going to be, 15-1. So, just a little flair to take note. Haven't had a chance personally to look at Sunday, Nick. So we'll let everybody dive into that later in the weekend, and next week, Alabama. Looking forward to second half of the meet. Starts on Sunday. It's hard to believe. Day 20 tomorrow.
Amazing. Flies by.
I know. It really does. Well, this flew by too. Nick Tamaro, everybody. NTAM, NTAMM 1215 on Twitter. You should obviously be following. And in addition to Nick's 17 responsibilities, he's the guy that's making those figures at Finger Lakes and a lot of the other far-flung tracks for buyer associates. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Steve. Good luck this weekend. Talk to you soon.
You too. See you later. Nick Tamaro, a little past the bottom of the hour. Let's get back here to Marcus Hirsch next, then a little Ed DeRosa up in Chicago. Ed's probably had 7 meals already in 36 hours. That's considering it's one of the great culinary towns in America, highbrow and lowbrow. We were talking about that last night, actually, the food in Chicago, out of this world. So we'll see what Ed has discovered in a little bit. But Marcus joins us next at the races. Second half weekend preview. We'll get out to California as well and do Del Mar. Stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. If you want to hit big at Saratoga and Del Mar, ExpressBet is the only way to play. ExpressBet customers have access to free handicapping information, like wager guides for the Traverse and Pacific Classic, and expert tips from renowned handicappers like Eddie Olchik. Plus, new ExpressBet customers will receive a $500, $100, or $20 welcome bonus when they sign up today. Learn more at ExpressBet.com. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here we go down a long dark road, same place where we used to go, and the words get stuck on the tip of my tongue, feeling cut off from everyone. Oh.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes to the top, and Marcus Hirsch sees another Arlington Million Day come around on the calendar. Marcus, good morning.
Hi, Steve. How's it going?
Excellent. Excellent. And the summer stop in Chicago, a great tradition. Talked to Marty earlier, and yeah, he was kind of decrying the lack of buzz, Marcus. What's your pulse on where things stand for Arlington and the Million?
I'm not exactly sure how that's being framed, the lack of buzz, like within the racing community and local media. I mean, what's the context for that?
I guess it was, I guess Marcus, Marty just felt that, I would say more racing, obviously, racing community kind of reaction and anticipation.
I don't know. If you compare it to 25 years ago, I'm sure that there's less, far less printed words and less conversation. But that's just, you know, there are a lot of million-dollar races now, and it doesn't stand out because of the purse. I think it's going to be difficult for this, you know, this day ever to come close to being what it was. When it was near the beginning of its creation, but you have to think a portion of that is a function of just Arlington's place in the racing landscape generally. They're not having a terrible meet, but certainly year by year, attention, you know, the number of eyes on the pages and number of wagers on the product has declined. And when it's not a part of an everyday menu of people who are getting involved, even just on weekends. And I think, you know, inherently there are less people that are interested in this day. But this card is very good. And I think, you know, it's well worth digging into.
Let's do it. Maybe start with the feature. We'll do the grade ones, and then we'll bookend it with the Bruce D and the Pucker Up.
Okay, good plan. Who do you like?
Who do I like?
That's not an easy question in the Arlington Million, is it?
No. I'd like Oscar Performance as a horse, and you know what? I hope he wins.
Okay. Well, I believe he's going to have a pace advantage. And I think that it's entirely possible he makes that stick. You know, his poker was really good. It was just, you know, it was a grade 3 mile. It's only started a year. I can't fault his performance. I don't know if he rated so much as got outrun a little bit early. I have a hard time getting inspired at the price. I know he won the Secretariat, but, you know, Taj Mahal and Afandim, he did not beat legitimate Group 1 horses in that race. And even going back to the Belmont Derby, he got loose on an easy lead and then, again, did not beat especially good horses. You can only beat who you're in against. And it's hard to follow the horse who's a 7 for 12 with $2 million in earnings, you know, multiple Grade 1 winner, and who has a pace advantage. And yet I still just can't completely get behind him here. I just think there are a number of other options. And I really have a hard time narrowing it down from him, Almanar, Spring Quality, and Robert Bruce. I mean, I rate those four pretty close to one another in the million this year. I think I ended up picking Spring Quality on top because that's just the way these things go. You've got to supposedly make the top pick, so that was my top pick, and I kind of fell back to good story, good winner territory in some part because I really like the horse. I think it's interesting how his career has evolved, and the owner, George Strawbridge, and trainer Graham Motion have really, I think, done a good job taking their time and getting the most out of this 6-year-old gelding with only 11 starts. I also think from a more functional handicapping perspective that he does have enough tactical pace. I mean, he won over 7/8 on dirt twice, that he could not necessarily go with Oscar Performance if that horse is going like 24-48, but be, if he breaks alertly, be maybe second or third within striking range, which is like not going to be the case with a horse like Almanar, who's got, you've got to take a hold of him and get him to relax and get off the pace. And that could be, you know, horses who are running like that in this race, if they go slow like they very well might, that could spell trouble.
If Spring Quality gets the ride that Edgar turned in the Manhattan, there's nothing he can't do. It was one of the most impressive jockey efforts. I think in my memory, Marcus, it was astounding what he did.
He did it. I'm getting like a perfect, I don't know about perfect. He got a really good trip from post 13. That doesn't happen very often, right?
Agree.
And
agree.
The timing was really impeccable. I mean, the Manhattan continues to be a fascinating case. It was the most bunched finish I can recall in a high-level race like that. I believe it was 5 3/4 from first to last in a 13-horse field, which is, you know, historically we're supposed to think that's an indictment of the fundamental quality of a race when it ends up like that. But I don't know if you can necessarily say that. It may have just been a weird coincidence, in addition to some of that, but lacking a standout. But obviously, you know, trip is going to be a huge portion of this thing. And this horse, I mean, Spring Quality, he finished better, you know, as well as anyone in that race. And I do think he's pretty darn good, even though he's come kind of out of nowhere and taken people by surprise. Now, Robert Bruce was a big, you know, Chad Brown buzz horse, you know, first time out. And I liked his race in the Fort Marcy where he beat Spring Quality. And I don't think that you can argue that in the Manhattan, he just never really had a fair chance to run. And I was definitely impressed the way he went under the wire. And he galloped out in front quickly. And we can overrate those sorts of things. But to me, that signifies a horse who really did have more than he was given a chance to show in that race. I feel comfortable with him at the distance and whatever the course condition ends up being. There's not going to be any more rain, I don't think. But they did get 0.44 inches right across the street from Arlington yesterday to go on top of the 2.25 they had late Tuesday afternoon. So the course is going to be good. It's not going to be a foot-rattling course, a horse maybe like Money Multiplier would like to see. But, you know, Robert Bruce, I think he is a legitimately good horse, and I really expect him to run well. But, I mean, I got to mention Century Dream, who I think is the best of the Europeans and who will be a fair odds. I think the first place to start there, Steve, is that just the whole division of older European horses from a mile up is not, I just don't think it's that great this year. It's definitely below par, and I think you have to see, you know, like the Queen Anne in that context, and to take nothing away from the horses that ran well there. Accidental Agent was a very surprising winner. Now Lightning Spear did come back and win at Goodwood, but he loves Goodwood, and that may have been a particularity of that course. And that's a seven-year-old who was winning his first Group 1 race ever. I think Century Dream has legitimately improved, and even though he runs a mile a lot, he probably gets a mile and a quarter with a fairly short stretch by European standards, at least. And I think he's some value, and if the course is on like just around good, that's probably going to be about perfect for him. But I just don't know that the quality is necessarily there.
I was going to ask you your preference on the Euro, so thanks for answering that. Let's turn our attention to the Beverly D, mile and 3/16ths, and Chad Brown with an assault on this race. Aidan O'Brien comes with Athena, who was the Blitzkrieg winner of the Belmont Oaks. And then there's Daddy's Little Darlin', who's going to get a very comfortable inside trip. And I've learned to not to discount her under any circumstances.
I do think that she's maybe better than a lot of people give her credit for. And I know that she just won the Modesty last time over a horse whose connection decided not to run in this race because it was probably too tough for her, but she could be a part of it. A Daddy's Little Darling path to victory seems unlikely to me because I think there are a handful of horses who are maybe just a little bit baseline better than she.
Mm-hmm.
I can't fault Sister Charlie in any way. Although one could argue that she won by a nose in the Diana, and there may have been horses behind her who had worse trips, and she definitely was not a definitive winner of that race, in my opinion, by any stretch. And it is back quicker than this barn typically does. I know that they've had the Diana Bevdi double in mind all along and have probably plotted a course accordingly, and I'd be surprised if she doesn't fire. I don't know that she has a ton of upside. I feel like if she runs to her peak, that's fine and she can win, but I don't know that we should expect her to do better than that. And I do think Four Star Crook is a little bit underrated. I mean, and it's an interesting horse in that she ran so much against New York Reds earlier in her career, and I think it kind of obscured the fact that she's a very legitimate teaming horse. And, you know, the New York is kind of seen, I think, as a fluke because of the super fast pace and the huge margins during the race from first to last and the way it unfolded. But I have to rate Four Star Crook, you know, in a comparable range to Sister Charlie at a considerably higher price. And I will be surprised if Doña Bruja doesn't give a fine account of herself this year. She's got a couple limitations. You know, her run doesn't go on forever. She has to be ridden really properly to get the most out of her. But when she gets things right, she has an extremely impressive performance in her, one that I think is actually good enough to win this race. Jose Valdivia Jr. went down to Keeneland to work her for Ignacio Correas two works ago to get a feel for her. I think Jose is pumped up and ready to give this horse the right kind of trip. I think they've got a good strategy mapped out, and I picked her on top and would love to see her win.
That'd be a great story. And, of course, just missed last year as DeCita got by, and she ended up dead heating in that setting with the Grand Jeté. Let's talk about the three-year-old boys, and we do have plenty of Euro Invasion to talk about here, and then some of the three-year-olds that have kind of come from various points on the compass, including the slightly enigmatic Analyze It.
Yeah, I think you have to ride everything through your feelings about Analyze It in this race. I just don't really know entirely how to take his Belmont Derby Invitational and the Nene Ridge before it. It's hard to say without, being inside the horse, whether that with his head or if he doesn't really want to go a mile and a quarter. And I think the an important consideration either way is, even if, you know, he just does the same thing again, is there a horse as good as Catholic Boy to take advantage and beat him? You know, whether he doesn't quite stay or whether he's got a mental tick where he's, as soon as he makes the front, he's putting his feet in the ground a little bit, which I lean toward that as being the explanation to some extent. I do think they might change tactics a little bit and hold on to him a little bit longer and try to move a little bit later so that that doesn't even become an issue. This race should be run at a very legitimate pace with Real Story on the rail, a horse who has really improved, and I think it's going to give a good account of himself, but probably, in my mind, isn't quite good enough to win unless they just let him go. But it should be a fair run race, and I don't know this for sure, but just I have to think Lucius Tiberius for Bally Doyle. I know he's been held up in his other starts, his recent starts, but just on form and pedigree, I don't know that they're taking a shot so much as trying to make sure that it is a legitimate pace for Hunting Horn, who has, you know, a greater level of accomplishment and a stronger pedigree. I mean, on the surface of things, you would have to think that that's the betterment of the two horses. And they may, looking at the Belmont Derby, you know, they went 49 and 113, and this horse was tracking and couldn't make up ground into a fast finishing quarter at 5/16. I mean, you could certainly understand them thinking, well, we're not going to let that happen again, and we're not going to let Analyze just jog along right off the pace and get first run, so let's make sure that they go fair tempo. But post-13, now with Oscar performance wide, he gets to leave running, and it's easier for him to get positioned, but these wide draws at a mile and a quarter at Arlington, where the race starts at the end of the far turn, are not good at all, and Hunting Horn is going to be up against it as far as the kind of trip he gets. I think that, you know, you have to have a horse that's superior in order to overcome that sort of thing, and I don't know that he's necessarily that horse where he can win from that draw without, you know, a lot of things going right there.
So that leaves you with Analyze It.
But, yeah. I mean, the European horse that, I mean, Bandua, who's probably, I mean, his form doesn't look that great. He looked good training yesterday. He kind of caught the eye to the extent, you know, where, oh, Dermot Weld, Buick, you know, horse is going to, he's 20-1 on the line. Worth considering, I think. Platinum Warrior, though, is the one that could really be interesting, I feel. You know, he's going to have to step up, but he stays. He wants to be on the top of the ground. The trainer, Mick Helford, was not happy when it rained, but he will be happy that it's sunny and breezy and drying. And he hit his head on the gate when he broke in the Irish Derby and then was way behind a very, very dawdling pace and didn't have really much of a chance in that race at all. He gets an American jockey, which could be decent for him, and I think that he's got a very legitimate chance.
I'm going to throw out a goofball horse as just a price booster, and it only because he's completely progressive and developing with every start, and that's Sniper Kitten. And I think there's a chance that he picks up a minor share, as they say.
You know, I wouldn't dispute that. I mean, it's hard to fault his form, and we'll get a little bit of a line on who he beat in the Mystic Lake Derby, because No Brag, Just Fact, the second in that race, is running in the Bruce D before the Secretariat. Not that, I mean, people overrate these company lines things to some
right.
extent, and the flattering and franking of form. I mean, that's a lot more complicated than just, oh, horse X was second and then was first, so the horse, you know, anyway. But I wouldn't discourage anybody from this horse at all. I mean, he might well stay. You know, he stayed a mile and an eighth against obviously lesser company. The Fig Jelly, I think, was second in the Quick Call on Wednesday at Saratoga. I believe the horse he beat at Keeneland.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, he's got a mile and a quarter pedigree. I know that they were thinking about this race as soon as the horse won last time, and he's been prepared accordingly by a trainer who has historically done well on this card with a variety of horses. So. No complaints about that goofball idea, Steve.
Well, one that's betting the pick five and the pick four, you got to have answers for the Bruce D and for the Pucker Up, which came up fabulous. And the Bruce D a fun group, and they're going to go the one-turn mile. You mentioned No Brag, Just Fact. Larry Ravelli is on fire. The tabulator shows up here. How about Bill Van Meter with Nottaway? This is a fun group.
Well, I mean, for me, you've got to spread in this race and pick whatever. I personally could not lean on the tabulator, especially at the price, in any way, shape, or form. I know he has a good Arlington Poly Track win, but Ravelli really primes horses to run well first time out, and I just don't think this horse is progressing at all, and I don't know that you're going to get much of a bump even with the class drop. Mr. Freeze, who was second in the Iowa Derby, was very impressive, obviously, last week at Mountaineer, winning the West Virginia Derby, and there's no doubt that the tabulator is coming out of the best races, but I am casting as wide a net as my bankroll can handle. I don't particularly like Sir Anthony or PR Radio Star. I think that Chief Okie Dokie is kind of marginal despite running against good horses on turf last time. You have to realize, look at the splits in that race. He was right on just a walking pace and then got run over by better horses. I don't think that Springfield was especially good. The race that he won, and that produced Wiley Peyote. So I guess we're kind of getting down here. And you mentioned Will Be Van Meter's horse, Nottaway. That's the horse I landed on as a top selection, although I am not, the confidence level is not high enough that I would be pressing on that too much. But I do think that this horse has run some pretty good races, and though he didn't get much of a number for it and maybe didn't beat the best horses, I thought he caught the eye the way he finished in that that Polytrack race, his first start on synthetic at Arlington. So I definitely want to get involved with him. And as I said, I want to cast as wide a net with some backups and B plays in a pick five as I can afford here.
Well, the pick five ends with the wild 13-horse Pucker Up. And this race has done more with 100,000 the last few years, Marcus, than any I can think of. It seems to draw a big competitive group annually.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. And the prep for it on Million Preview Day was the same way. It was a fabulous race with a big, big field, very competitive. I mean, Beyond Blame is a pretty nice filly, the 3-1 morning line favorite. But post 13, is she that nice? I mean, she's going to need a lot of luck to win from out there. I don't think you can count on that happening really at all. The bookend races here are very tough for me. I have a hard time narrowing this race down considerably. And again, as with the Bruce D, I want as much coverage as I can get. I'm going to try to narrow my opinions in the middle races of the pick five and just try to get something home here. As a top selection, I had Secret Message, who I don't believe necessarily will be 12-1 for Motion and Irad Ortiz. The trainer, Graham Motion, he won the prep here in July with Colonia, who was very impressive. And so I was speaking to Mr. Motion about that horse the day after, 2 days after. He said, well, she's going to maybe run in the Del Mar Oaks. And we have another horse that we've been pointing for this race already, Secret Message. So, she's been targeted this way for a long time now, and she didn't have really a fair chance last time at Churchill because of a very poor start. And then the Hilltop was obviously run in a bog. You have to rate that. I can't take those races over that turf course at face value. The horse, that was the first turf race. The horse was a private purchase. The horse has a lot of upside. And I think she's going to, I don't think she's a 12-1 shot. I think she's going to run better than that.
It's a manic group. You got horses coming from all surfaces, and there's so many horses you could grab a handle on and get excited about. I won't dissuade anybody from the time I talk to you.
The Dark Artist, I'm not. I got a user, but I don't know that she's going to stay. Really, and have a huge amount of use for Princess Warrior. Pamina is progressive, Wanted the Distance, usable. Cosmic Burst, she's run against some good horses on dirt, and to go back two generations in her pedigree, she's got a ton of turf on the female side. And just by Violence, you know, who gets a grass horse, I think she's got to be used. Diamond Coat's tough for me. I mean, I'd say I'm going to have to go six or seven deep here to feel comfortable. And I'm really going to hope that, I mean, I respect Beyond Blame. I think she's nice. I'm going to hope that she cannot get it done from post 13, which is going to boost things considerably, I believe.
I talked to Marty about Steve Sandy's filly as well, the Escondorea filly coming up from Presque Isle, that, you know, might be able to get the lead here, and I don't see a tremendous amount of pace pressure.
Well, if she can get the lead, I mean, she's, I guess we've got her, the time form pace figures have her pretty decent 108, so she might make the front. Now, this is, it's worth mentioning, they use two courses on Million Day. There aren't official courses. They create the Million course. The grade ones are in lane five on the outside, and then all the other turf races are down on the inside. In lane one, you know, speed held really well during the dry part of the summer here, but I don't know that we can count on that being the case at all. I mean, I'm guessing and hoping for a fair playing course on this card. I mean, in the mood, 30-1 with the leading jockey, and if you think the horse is in the lead, but that's, to me, that's exactly what this race is like. I mean, people are going to seize on their little angles, and you should run with it, particularly with these pricier horses.
Yeah, it's a great ending to a wonderful card on one of the best days of racing in this country, Arlington Million Day. And Marcus, you and Marty McGee will be bringing the coverage wall-to-wall for everybody, DRF.
You're just going to follow Chad Brown around all day.
There you go. You could do that, too. That's what Marcus seems. That's Marty's plan.
Well, I mean, the guy, no one's ever swept all three. He's got a great chance to do it. I mean,
how about that? A good point. And by the way, had Dermot Magner the other day, and you had to be impressed with the comeback of Hirsch.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say no one asked my permission for that, and I'm a little bit teased. But at least they spelled it right.
Exactly. I knew that was going to, I was going to bring that into play, that it spelled it without the C. I love it.
Is the horse named after Seymour Hirsch?
You know what? I should, I'll find out. I'll find out from Dermot. We'll find out where it came from.
Super prominent Hirsch. Maybe it's a family friend or something. But Seymour Hirsch is the one that comes to mind as the most prominent name.
Well, Marcus Hirsch is a prominent name when it comes to coverage for the Daily Racing Form. And Marcus, have a wonderful time tomorrow. I hear the weather straightened up, and it looks like it'll be a great Million Day.
Fingers crossed.
Always a pleasure. Marcus Hirsch, everybody. DRF Hirsch. And as Marcus points out, spell it correctly. H-E-R-S-H. Just like the horse. Hour three upon us. Going to check in with Ed DeRosa. He's in Chicago. And then Hammer. So stay with us. Hour three. Del Mar ahead. And a little bit more from Chicago.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Fun in the Sun is Express Bet Summer Treasure. If you can't make it to the spa or where the surf meets the turf, do the next best thing and play Saratoga and Del Mar with Express Bet. And while you're at it, don't miss Express Bet's $100,000 Fun in the Sun handicapping competition. Play Saturdays by making a live $10 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. Each week, top players collect $4,000 for first, $2,000 for second, and $1,000 for third. Plus, based on cumulative earnings throughout the season, the top top four finishers will win Pegasus World Cup Handicapping Championship seats, a $12,000 value each. Free registration is now open for account holders only. Don't miss this fantastic opportunity to shoot for some cool, fun-in-the-sun Saturday summer cash with ExpressBet Saratoga and Del Mar. Visit ExpressBet.com now to open an account and for complete fun-in-the-sun details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.